It's Santa James, here to tell you all about the Creepy Kingdom Holiday Soiree, taking place on December 9th, somewhere at the Disneyland Resort. The exact location will be revealed only to those who RSVP on our Facebook event page, which can be found at facebook.com/creepykingdom. So join us and get together with other Creepy Kingdom listeners and take part in our Secret Santa gift exchange. That's December 9th, somewhere on the Disneyland Resort. RSVP, facebook.com/creepykingdom.
Spellcaster Media presents.
Greetings and welcome to episode 138 of the Creepy Kingdom Podcast. A podcast all about the creepiness of theme parks, films, and beyond. I'm your host, Mr. James H. Carter II. And in this very special episode of Creepy Kingdom, we welcome Lee and Tracy from the unofficial Universal Orlando Podcast. We're going to talk all about stocks and bonds. No, we're going to talk about Universal Orlando. So, without any further ado, let's begin. Alrighty, I'm here with Lee and Tracy for the unofficial Universal Orlando podcast. Hello.
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 This is the longest podcast title in the world.
It is. It used to be longer, right? It used to be 100%.
We dropped that a long time ago.
Yeah.
But it seemed like a good idea back in the day, but then when you started trying to take it a little bit more serious, like, really, that's terrible.
Yeah, it was a bit gimmicky.
It was.
Should have added a few more words, like the totally, for sure, 100%.
Yeah.
Totally, yeah. I assure you, that's unofficial.
Universal Orlando Podcast TM.
Right. <Yeah. laughs> Anyways, you shortened it down, UUOP for short. You can't get it much shorter than that. But thanks for coming on the show. You guys have had me on your show a few years ago.
Missed out, yes. Tracy was, you had to nip out shopping.
I had to go shopping. People demand to be fed in this house. So.
Well, you know, I guess that's more important than talking to me, I guess. but also, you guys have been on the show before, not your podcast, because... We did a review, a walkthrough of the Halloween house in 2014 for our Creepy Days, where we had different podcasters host mini episodes for us.
Yes.
And, but I think that was Darren and Nina that were on that one.
Yes. There's lots of bleeping. It will have definitely been Darren and Nina. Nina swears a lot in houses.
Yes, she was. It was funny to listen to because she was screaming.
Yeah.
I got a chuckle out
of it. Having been to Halloween Horror Nights with Nina, yes, I can vouch she's like that in every house.
Yes. Oh, she's like that just walking through just regular areas.
I would love to be like that. I've become not jaded, but I don't get scared.
Desensitized.
So it's just like, I wish I was like that.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know if I wish I was like that or not, but I know how it is. When you go to a lot of haunts, eventually you know, you don't get that scared or startled. Sometimes they get you, but for the most part.
Yeah.
Like as a rule, I don't get them. And the one we went through, Jack Presents 25 Years of Monsters of Mayhem, 2 years ago now at Halloween Horror Nights 25. And in one of the sections of it, there's like a doorway, like a gothic doorway that goes around the corner and up some stairs. And I thought, I know, I'll be cocky and I'll have a look through this doorway and up the stairs, just as the scare actor was coming to do the scare through the door. So we sort of met each other going through the door, and that made me jump a little bit. Like, I think I also made the scare actor jump a little bit as well.
Well, you know, a little give and take. Everyone, you know, helps out and participates. But before we we're jump a little forward here, talking about Halloween Horror Nights, why don't we give a little bit of background about your show? So you guys have been doing this show about Universal Orlando for 6.5 years, which is about 40 years in podcast years.
It feels like it.
So what year was it? I'm not good at math.
It was April. Our first episode came out on April the 7th, 2011.
Yes. Oh, wow. That's a long time ago in podcast years. So what was it? You know, the landscape even back then, I mean, it is crazy now, but back then was so crowded with Disney podcasts. What made you guys want to, you know, jump in the ring and do Universal?
I can tell this story because it was all me, to be quite honest.
Yes.
I discovered podcasts after coming back from a trip to Orlando in 2005, where I was just clamoring for anything to kind of get that magic back when I wasn't there.
Sure.
And I found the Diz Unplugged, and then there was a couple of British ones that started at the time, and Your Mousecast was one that's sadly not about anymore. And their shtick on the show was they'd talk about Disney for half the show, and then they'd get a guest on to do a trip report. So I volunteered to do a trip report, and I did a trip report on there, and I really, really enjoyed it. I thought, I could get into this podcasting thing. It's like, I love to talk. If anyone who doesn't know who I am, if you're already listening, you can pretty much...
Yeah, this
I
is
like
it.
To talk. So I thought, oh, I could get into this. So I kept emailing the guys going, if you're ever looking for a fourth, you know, I'm always free.
We kept ignoring him.
Yeah, pretty much. And then I thought, you know what? And I'd kind of thought about doing one on my sporting team, a podcast about that a couple of times. And then thought, you know, I love Orlando. I'd love to do one about that. And I started to think about what could I bring to the table as far as a Disney podcast goes. Nothing, basically, because everything is already out there. There's nobody doing anything unique in that Disney space really now, especially now.
Yeah.
So I thought, I do like Universal Orlando. So I knew a person who had kind of mentioned about doing one as well. So I reached out to said person, and you think 100% unofficial Universal Orlando podcast is a bad name? I won't even tell you what originally it was. It was terrible. It was really punny.
Oh, you got to say it now. Come on.
It was entitled Me and Universal.
Oh, Me and, wow.
Yeah. It's awful.
It kind of keeps with the Your Mousecast kind of thing. Me and Universal.
Yeah, it's awful. I'm so glad that never happened.
Yeah.
But the guy, the chemistry wasn't there. It didn't feel natural. And I know one thing from a podcast, if it's forced, it doesn't work.
Yeah. Sure, yeah.
So I came off that conversation thinking, right, who's the one person in my life I know that I have the best chemistry with? Tracy.
And I went, no, not on your Nelly. Nope. And I pushed for about 2 days, didn't I? And I was like, nope, not doing it. And then all of a sudden this little voice in the back of my head was going, go on, might be fun. Go on. And then all of a sudden I talked myself into it. Lee didn't have to do any work there.
Okay.
So I came to work one night and I went, okay then, let's give it a go.
So we did our inaugural test podcast, which is still there, and it's horrible.
Goodness.
We played it for the kids after we recorded before we released it. And our youngest, who was about, what would she have been then? What was that? 8?
11,
6,
so she'll have been...
13, she'll have been about 7.
6 or 7.
And her feedback was, why are you talking like that? I noticed everybody does it when you first start. If you're not used to sort of that public speaking thing, everyone talks dead wooden. Hello, and welcome to the unofficial Universal Orlando podcast. I am your host, Lee. And joining me is my good lady wife, Tracy.
Hello.
It's just like, oh my God, it's off. And just started from there, really. Yeah. And then
we only ever really planned to do maybe four or five, didn't we?
Well, it started off we were going to do one a month. And then within a week, it was two weekly. Yeah. And then now we've been doing them weekly for the last 4 years.
Yeah. Because we've had to, really.
It is. When we took on podcasting about Universal, it was in the dark days where the Wizarding World had just opened and there wasn't an awful lot going on. And then sort of once we started, that's when everything really started to happen.
Yeah. Was that pre-Comcast? Because what year did Comcast buy Universal?
It'll have been before, because I think Blackstone was still in charge at that point.
So before the money hose was turned on, is what you're saying? The Comcast money hose.
Yeah. It's like, really, how much news is there going to be? And it's like, there's stuff coming out all the time now.
Which is excellent.
And then I was looking, because I'd been on your Mousecast and their thing was the trip report thing. I was like, that's an easy thing. We can get people on to talk about their trips, and put a few posts on some forums and stuff. And that's when Hunter came forward. Our first American co-host. And Hunter was, he was very young at the time. I look back on
just
it now
18,
and I forgot
wasn't
he was how young he was. And then he buggered off to do the Disney College program. So we'd had Darren on the show a couple of times to do, he'd done a trip report and he'd also covered Halloween Horror Nights for us that year. And then because we kind of had a relationship with him, Darren joined the show to replace Hunter while he was on the college program. And then, so there was the three of us, and then Hunter finished the college program and he came back, and there was the four of us for the longest time. And then at the moment, it's pretty much just me, Tracy and Darren. Hunter's had a lot
going on in the background.
He's got
he?
A lot going on. So we're kind of just the three of us at the moment, and he sort of drops in as and when he can.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much the story in a nutshell, really.
Yeah.
Okay. So, what kind of like response and feedback were you guys getting? Because essentially, it's the listeners are mostly going to be people that listen to Disney podcasts or theme park, particularly, right? I mean, that's So what was the feedback you guys were getting when you started?
In fairness, trying to get feedback out of podcast listeners sometimes can be like pulling teeth. Yeah. A lot of people don't like to get in touch. It's weird. We all do it. We'll listen to a podcast, think, I'll have to email them, and you never get round to it. I think the thing that shocked a lot of people was the fact that, I mean, at the time, we were the only Universal Orlando podcast out there. There was a few people that tried. I know Eric and Rachel, the guys over at Behind the Thrills, they'd done IOA Central Radio, but it didn't last very long. I think the Diz Unplugged had tried to do a Universal show back then, but that never really stood the test of time either. I mean, obviously, they're a big player in it now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was us. And I think the fact that we were in England talking about the theme parks over there was the thing that a lot of people were shocked by, that we were managed to keep on top of.
I found that very interesting when I discovered your show, that you guys were so on top of it from being so far away.
That becomes from my obsession.
I think that's called obsession.
It's taken over my entire life. James, you know, doing a podcast, it's not just, you don't just sit down for an hour and that's it.
No, it's always comes natural. That's the only way you can do the podcast. If you have to force yourself to talk about something, that's not, it's going to come across as uninteresting and boring, but you have to be obsessed with a topic to be able to talk about it. You know?
But then it's everything else that comes with it as well. It's doing that research. It's making connections. It's talking to people. It's emails and learning more about your craft, and it does become a total obsession.
It does, and I think because it is our passion, and basically we're doing all, I mean, we're doing this for other people, but we're doing it for ourselves because we love it. So if other people can join us on that ride, brilliant, more the merrier.
Like, one of the driving factors behind doing what we've tried to do with the podcast over the last 6 years is everybody knows the background of every Disney attraction, right? You've heard it to death, the background. For you, James, doing your documentary about the Haunted Mansion, everyone knows most of the stories behind the creation of the Haunted Mansion.
Especially the diehards, especially the podcast listening audience, for sure.
Yeah.
But that information isn't out there as far as Universal goes, and that's something that I've really tried to go after, is that history and document that for because that the Universal community as a whole, it still doesn't rival Disney, but it's definitely getting there. There are fans of Universal that are as diehard as those Disney fans now.
Yeah.
Well, that's you kind of brought up the next kind of topic I wanted to talk about there, which I find it's very interesting. We can even start with this show. I mean, this show is about – it started out being about the creepiness of the Disney films and theme parks. But even from the very beginning, within my first 10 episodes, I did a whole episode speculating on what was going to be in Nocturne Alley when they made the announcement of Diagon Alley. You know, like, because it was immediate connection to me. You know, it's like for what I wanted to cover. I mean, clearly, the world of the Wizarding World, but just Harry Potter in general, is kind of a natural fit for people that like creepy Disney stuff. It's kind of, but as time's gone on, I've discovered that, and as, with the show, that there's so much more to cover outside of just Disney that still works. And as a fan of theme parks, I always grew up with Universal being just something else that we did as well. It was never like an either or type of thing for me. And so what's interesting, as we're in this theme park fan bubble, the divide that was there, it's slowly going away because of the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, and people actually making the trek over to the Universal parks and saying like, oh, this is kind of cool, or this is completely amazing. I never seen anything like this before. You know, I was stepping in Diagon Alley. But, you know, I never really got it. You know, I never really understood it. I guess, well, to explain kind of how I grew up in Southern California, and so I grew up going to Disneyland a lot and Universal Hollywood. Now, Universal Hollywood is not really a theme park, even right now. You know, but, you know, it was all about the tram tour, you know, and that was just as fun and exciting. And they just started putting in rides when I was still going there as a kid. I think the first ride, and I'm not a historian on this at all, the first ride I remember them putting in there was E.T.,
and yeah, probably.
Yeah, I think I think that was before Back to the Future. And
yeah, it will have been.
Yeah, and I remember going on that and just thinking, wow, this is just as much fun as going on Peter Pan. I mean, it's a Peter Pan ride, you know. It's you know, sort of. You know, it follows the same structure, a little weirder ending, but we'll talk about that later.
Yes, we will.
So I don't know. I mean, I was, you know, my dad never really liked going to Disneyland. My mom loves it. My sister loves it. My dad was, you know, he tolerated it once or twice, but he loved going to Universal. You know, he loves Jaws in general, and he loves movies. My dad definitely got me into being into movies because we always showing us all these movies when we were young. So he always loved going to the Universal tour. So I have a lot of fond memories of that. So as I grew older and I saw that, you know, I knew there was Universal Orlando, and I didn't get there until not that long ago for the very first time, because, you know, I lived in New Jersey, and I went to Walt Disney World in 1986. And then the next time I went was in 2009. So,
wow.
So I most of my theme park time has been spent in Southern California. And when I went in 2009, I was like, oh, I really want to go to that Universal park that I grew up watching. They have Nick Studios. You know, you see all that stuff on TV. But they were I just couldn't pull it off. And the Wizarding World wasn't open yet. So it was kind of one of those, like, well, let's just wait and go back when.
I don't think you missed a bad time. We were there in 2009, and the parks were in pretty bad shape.
Yeah, I hear that listening to your show, and I always think, what would happen if I went over there? And I've been like, man, what is this place? What's going on there? But you know, I would have gotten to, I'm sure I would have gotten to experience some of the, you know, even Jaws, which I never got to ride.
Yeah.
You know, I just got to experience it on the tram tour, which is, you know,
still, I think it's very sad. It's still very sore.
I'm sorry to bring it up. That's a sore subject. But anyway,
I'm a Harry Potter fan. I'm not that bothered.
So even to this day, there's people I know that are just like, and this is kind of a problem in Southern California, and I get it because they're like, because, you know, Universal Hollywood just doesn't compare to Disneyland at all, as a, you know, if you're putting them right next to each other. But,
yeah,
you know, because when you go to Universal Hollywood, it's a movie studio and there's stuff crammed in. It's not immersive. And going to Islands of Adventure for the first time, that's one of the most immersive theme parks, I think, you know, that I've ever been to, definitely in the United States. I don't know. I haven't been everywhere in the world, so I can't really say that. but I think in the United States, you know, for sure, even independent of, you know, Hogsmeade, the Wizarding World.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a bit lackluster at the moment. We talked about it quite a bit lately.
Right, because it hasn't changed, but just if it's your first time there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was the park that made me fall in love with Universal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember my first time there myself was in 2013, and it was all about getting to Hogsmeade. You know, it was just like,
yeah.
I walk in the park, you're like, what is all these things in my way?
Get out the way, Cat in the Hat.
Yeah, yeah.
Alone. No. I've got to admit, though, for all I really, really was desperate to get to Hogsmeade, I was really sad that I got marched through Zeus Land, and it was like, no, I need to stop.
Look.
It was worth it.
I had huge tears in my eyes walking into that park in that 2013 we went. It was the first time we'd been to the park since we started the podcast. And as soon as I hear that entrance music into Port of Entry at Islands of Adventure, that's it. I'd become a gibbering mess.
Really?
So yeah. We walked into Port of Entry and I was like five steps ahead of Tracy and the kids because if anyone had spoke to me, I'd have just broke down and I'd like a wreck in the corner crying.
I just got hold of the kids just like, let's give Dad a minute.
Well, it's interesting for people who haven't gone and experienced Port of Entry, you know, that's kind of Islands of Adventure's Main Street, I guess, for lack of a better phrase or comparison. And, you know, it's a very unique land that, like, I know you guys talk about all the time on your show that people just like whiz through, but you could really spend time in there and just look at all the details and nooks and crannies and all this stuff. But what I was going to get back to was that, you know, I whizzed by all this stuff the first time, and then going back, you know, on my trips afterwards, it's just like, wow, I can't believe like I was so tunnel vision.
Yeah.
You know, passing by all this stuff. I mean, going through Seuss Landing, you know, it's incredible. I mean, whether you're a huge Seuss fan or, I think every kid grew up reading a Dr. Seuss book, you know, so you have some attachment to it. You know, so just being in that environment, you know, is pretty spectacular. And, the other thing I like to bring up when I get really nerdy with people is that, they always say, oh, Disney's better than Universal X, Y, and Z. And I say, you know, it's like, there's two points. Number one, it's like Disney has this nostalgia thing that's wrapped around us like a tight grip, you know, and they wheel you in with the films and they keep you there with the theme parks. Universal, no one has a strong attachment to Universal films because there's so many different things. They didn't brand themselves as like one thing. so there's that. But the other thing I like to bring up is that it's like all the same people making these attractions. like they're just different people writing the checks.
People don't realize that most of the creative members that built Islands of Adventure were the ones that were sacked from Disney.
Yeah,
yeah, right after Animal Kingdom. I'd like to bring up too is that a lot of the ideas in the land that was never built, Beastly Kingdom, is what ended up in Islands of Adventure.
Yeah, Dragon Challenge was pretty much that.
Yeah, because you could see concept art of a similar dragon roller coaster ride that was supposed to be in Beastly Kingdom, you know.
Yeah. You've got to think that the Imagineers and those theme park creators in somewhere like Orlando, the pool that they're pulling from is only small, and they switch back and forwards.
Oh, yeah, it's two-way traffic, isn't it?
One of the sort of high up Imagineers at Disney now is Michael Ruddy, who's creating a lot of the projection and the nighttime stuff at Hollywood Studios, was instrumental in a lot of stuff. Grinchmas was his baby, a lot of that, you know, in the parks. But Halloween Horror Nights is what it is because of Michael Ruddy.
Yep.
Yeah, and now he's high up there at Disney. Like, there's, uh-huh. it's just this arbitrary divide that makes no sense, because there's more stuff for everybody to enjoy. You know, that's kind of exactly. My opinion. And also the rivalry between the check writers, as it will, are raising the quality of the attractions.
So for those of us who visit, it's win-win.
The thing is, I used to be like that. I went to Orlando for Disney. And I was excited about Universal, and I went, and as I say, Universal was, Islands of Adventure blew me away.
Yes, sir.
Since starting the podcast and immersing myself more and more in Universal, yeah, I have a little bit of that divide there now. I do play it up on the show a little bit that I'm a Disney hater. I'm not entirely, but I definitely side more with Universal now. I have enjoyed, we haven't been to Disney since 2013, and I enjoyed my time on Universal probably far more than I did at Disney.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you're also, I don't know if bias is the word, but you have a very unique perspective that most people don't, being so invested in the parks with the coverage, you know? So, and communicating with, and plus the knowledge you're talking about, you know about the background of this attraction. You talk to the person that wrote the story, you know, like, so that's definitely understandable. And I think that's a good thing about your show. And it does provide that, you know, I do enjoy when you have those guests on your show where.
So do we. I get nervous as hell, to be quite honest. I've been doing this for 6.5 years, and every time I sat down when we interviewed, the show director of Halloween Horror Nights a couple of weeks ago, I was sat there before we made that conference call nearly throwing up in the corner.
Oh. Yeah.
Tracy never gets bothered. The only time I've ever seen Tracy actually that dawn on her that we're talking to somebody quite important was we interviewed John Murdy from Halloween Horror Nights Hollywood about, God, it must be 4 years ago now. And he was talking about being on the back lot at Universal Studios Hollywood because his father worked on Back to the Future, and he was there watching them film Back to the Future. And Tracy just looked across the room at me and just mouthed, "Oh my God." And I went, "Yes, it's finally dawned on me." Yeah, we are talking to someone in theme park terms who's quite a superstar.
But that was as long as the.
Oh, yeah, that
lasted.
It.
Oh, that was back to the. Yeah, okay, whatever.
Yeah, no.
Yeah,
just people at the end of the day.
I'm such a nerd, though, that they're my rock stars.
Well, sure. It's all. Yeah. I mean, I understand. I don't necessarily get nervous, but I get those kind of like, I can't believe I'm having this conversation.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if I really had that on the podcast or not, but I can relate to it. I definitely had it making Foolish Mortals, talking to Rolly Crump, you know, like that was, you know, something like that, where he's talking about. He's like, and then Walt said this. Well, that was like, oh, Walt Disney is a real person. He's not this magical thing, you know, like, I mean, you know, it was just, he was never alive during any of our lifetime, you know? So just to hear these firsthand stories, you know, told to me, you know, so I get that for sure.
I think the biggest nerd out moment we've had, we did one of the RIP tours at Halloween Horror Nights 25, and we were stood outside the VIP lounge. And when Mike Aiello comes out and shouts, "Tracy," that's when you go, "Oh my God, Mike Aiello knows who we are."
Mike Aiello knows who I was.
And just in case our listeners don't know, Mike Aiello was running Halloween Horror Nights up until this past year, right? Because he just stopped doing that, right?
He's something like his titles. Something like senior vice president for entertainment at Universal Orlando. Now he oversees any live entertainment at Universal Orlando. He oversees that. So like Celestina Warbeck and Diagon Alley and The Tale of the Three Brothers or the Frog Choir, anything like that. Mm-hmm. That's, he's the sort of head of that department now.
Interesting. Well, let's chat a little Halloween Horror Nights here, because if Harry Potter's not gonna get you over there, which I don't know why it wouldn't. I guess it's possible someone's like Harry Potter that listens to this show, but I'd figure it's kind of just handed. I've discussed Wizarding World in depth on past episodes, so we're going to get into that. But I think what's interesting is about Halloween Horror Nights as an event is that that's another kind of thing that is really appropriate for our show, because even though it may be a bit much for maybe some of the listeners, it's kind of like the quality level of it is so high.
Oh yeah.
Like that there's nothing else like it, particularly Orlando. I say this so many times on the show, is like, I wish Disney would do something on par with this, with their skills and technology. I know they're not going to do straight up haunts, but to do some type of temporary Halloween high level walkthrough attractions.
I've said this.
Yeah, it would be amazing. But, you know, they don't need to do it because they sell out their Halloween parties doing the same thing every year.
Yeah. Yeah. They did try something at Disneyland Paris a few years ago called Terrorific Nights.
Oh, yes.
Really? I never heard of this.
It wasn't on the level of something like a Halloween Horror Nights, but it was definitely a step above something like Mickey's Not So Scary. So I think
so
if I remember
Mickey's
rightly...
Slightly scary.
Yeah,
slightly scary.
Mickey's a little bit more scary than not so scary. So they still have like a tram tour thing as part of the studios. I've never even been to Disneyland Paris, but I remember listening to a podcast them talking about it. So they did like the tram tour, and they had it goes through like scenes and stuff from, I might be getting confused, I'm sure it has like Reign of Fire, but I might,
oh, yeah.
Is that there or is that at Hollywood, Universal Hollywood? No, I think it's there.
Is that the dragon movie?
yeah. So they've got like sets from some of those. Yeah. Christian Bale and was it Matthew McConaughey?
I
can't remember. Anyway, the people on the tram, but they had stooges on the tram itself, and there'd be zombies in the area, and you'd stop through, and they'd like jumped on the tram and start doing zombie stuff, and then drag someone off.
That's terrifying for a Disney theme park.
I think that's awesome. I love stuff like that. They did it, James, other than this year, when was the last time you did Halloween Horror Nights in Orlando?
I did this year, I did 2016 and 2014. So those are the ones I've went.
So in the Purge House at 2015, at 25... I actually got this. It was pretty cool. So I was just walking along, minding my own business through the Purge House, and this girl sort of stepped in from round the corner and went, "Oh, excuse me, I've lost my friends. Do you mind if I just cut in and catch up with them?" I was
really?
Like, "Yeah, okay, carry on." I was like, "This is a bit." I didn't think anything of it. Yeah. We rounded the next corner, and a scare actor dressed as a purger grabbed hold of her, pulled her to him, like fake slit her throat, and then chucked her behind the curtain. And I was like, "Oh my god, that is amazing!"
That's incredible.
I didn't see that. Oh,
it was absolutely,
because
I just didn't expect it. It was like, "Oh my god, that is the coolest thing I've ever seen."
So, taking a few steps back. If someone asks you, like, what is Halloween Horror Nights, like, how do you describe it if someone doesn't have any frame of reference for it?
It's such a tough thing.
It is to create one all-encompassing little phrase or sentence for it.
Because if you've never done a scare attraction before, it's so awkward to explain.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's just like a walkthrough of all of your nightmares, plus... Really, it's like walking onto the set of a horror film. I mean, you know you're safe, but these things are getting close. I don't know. It's really hard to verbalize, isn't it?
To someone to explain it to someone who's never been to anything like that. We always say, like, when I'm trying to talk to people over here about it, because it's not the haunt industry in the UK is it's getting bigger, but it's not huge still.
Well, Halloween isn't super huge in the UK, right?
No.
I'm doing my part. I've been for years.
So it's like we have Merlin do the dungeons over here. There's one in America somewhere.
Just one. America's a big,
you know, I
big
think
place,
there is only
you know?
One.
Wow.
There's one in Holland, and it's basically like an hour walk through, like a haunt, basically. They're toned down. It's a more, I wouldn't say family friendly, but they're not intense.
Right.
Through the history of a certain area. So there's the London dungeon. So it goes through like the Black Plague and Jack the Ripper and that type of thing. And it's more an interactive experience with actors playing scenes out with a few sort of scares in between. That's how I always try. And if, have you ever done the dungeons? They'll go, oh yeah, similar to that, a little bit more scary. A
lot more scary.
Can be.
Okay.
A lot more fun.
It'll cost you a lot of money.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. Sure.
Worth every penny.
So it was interesting for me and my journey into haunts and all this stuff and going to Halloween Horror Nights was up in 2014. In my entire life, I had never gone through a haunt, like ever. It wasn't like around when I was growing up. Even though now that I'm such a theme park nerd, I know like Knott's Scary Farm at Knott's Berry Farm in Southern California, you know, they basically started the haunts industry in 1971. And I went to Knott's Berry Farm all the time. It was never anything any of our friends did. And then as I grew older, I was like, I don't know if I'd be into that. I mean, I love being in these like creepy and immersive environments, but I don't like people startling me. That's not something I'm craving, you know? And then, so 2014 Hollywood Horror Nights comes around. And I'm a huge fan of anything Robert Rodriguez does. So when I saw that I could walk through From Dusk Till Dawn, I was like, well, clearly I have to go to this. I was like,
absolutely.
I was like, you know, and I went, and yeah, you know, I can hear more details on past episode when I talk about it. But I just remember I went and I was just so blown away that I was like, wow, I am actually in this environment. Like the level of quality and the production value was so much higher than I had anticipated. You know, and you know, it blew me away. And then the scare zones, which I find to be really just another I can't even think of the right adjective. There's so much this fun to be in because it's, if you're in a good scare zone, you could see like a story being played out around you. And you're kind of, you know, a part of it. You know, it's not, it's about their, you know, like, you know, they try to like startle people walking by that aren't paying attention. But if you just hang out in there, you know, you actually get to see like a play, like happen completely around you.
Like, you know, The Purge this year is the prime example. That is, for me, I know a few people have complained, oh, The Purge again, but I just think it is the perfect IP to base a scare zone on. Mm-hmm.
For sure. That night when I went in 2014, The Purge was there, and I'd never even seen The Purge. I wasn't really interested in the IP at all, but you're right. It was the perfect place to just hang out in, you know, because you would see like people being kidnapped and then being driven over to an auction where they were auctioned. And it's just this whole thing out. In the meanwhile, you know, these people with these silly masks keep putting knives in my face and it just made me laugh. Like, you know, it's just like, I don't even think that happened this year to me. Maybe they stopped putting knives in people's faces. I know they're fake, but that was like the whole MO. That must have happened like 50 times that night because I kept hanging out in the Purge scare zone. So people just kept putting weapons in my face. And instead of me jumping, I would just laugh. So I don't know if that was
the...
I don't know if that's the reaction they wanted, but...
that's quite what they're going for. Say,
I'm a laugher too.
And then last year, 2016, the Vamp 55, that scare zone was one of my favorite things that I've ever been in a scare zone because I loved hanging out there. It was a homecoming parade, perfect. You're already outside, you know, you're already in the environment. It really looks like a parade where vampires have come and murdered everyone. And the characters are reacting to it like whiny teenagers from the 50s, basically.
Yeah. it's like Trick or Treat this year. That looks stunning.
Amazing.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. It wasn't so much of a story going on there, but, you know, that was a lot of fun. I mean, I did go to Hollywood Horror Nights this year, and I'm sure there'll be an episode about it by the time this one comes out. It was really tough to be able to only go for one night and not have Express Pass and try to get everything done because it really felt like I couldn't like hang out in like the scare zones. It's like either, you know, it's like, all right, I got it. Good. I soaked it in. There it is. All right. Here's the pictures. All right. All right, we got to go. I mean, that's kind of what it felt like all night. So I don't know what the solution is.
Go multiple nights.
Besides that,
buy express pass. Do the. I tell you what, the best advice is to find 9 or 8 or 9 or 10 friends and do the RIP tours. That's the best way to do it.
So what exactly is that?
It's how much is it? I think it was just extended.
We did it in 2015,
and it was for 10 people,
and it was $1,500, and that didn't include your admission in.
Yeah, and that was for up to 10 people, which I believe they've just extended to 12 people now, haven't they? I
don't know how much it is this year. I know last year they were coming in at about $2,200.
So that was what, $150 each it cost us.
Yeah.
Bearing in mind there was 4 of us in our family.
so it cost a little more, but.
But you get your own tour guide, and we had Tyler, who was awesome, who we knew previously, would requested him. It was his first year doing it as well, wasn't it?
He wasn't allowed to do private tours that year, but because we requested him, they sort of fast-tracked him through.
Yeah.
And
he did an awesome job.
Oh, he was amazing.
And basically, you can basically, you know, people who've got express pass, you just wave to them. Because you just get walked straight to the head of the line, straight into every house you want, as many times as you want.
Oh, express pass is only one time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And this was just, we got asked at the beginning of the night, what are your priorities? We basically said, get through all the houses as many times as we can.
You can tailor the event to how you want to do it. Because we had a couple in our group who wanted to see Billy and Ted, and we were like, no, it's crap, we're not going to see it. And they just went, all right, fair enough.
So we got to go through all the houses. But then
the tour guide knows all the backstory to the houses, so they'll give you info about the house itself. Darren and Nina had been 11 times that year, yet they still learned stuff about those houses that they didn't know.
Yeah, wow. And we had a backstage at some point, didn't we? Because we ended up under the Hogwarts Express line, and just you get additional information as well, you know, and you get a break time, which is in the immigration room in Men in Black. So you go downstairs, which was pretty cool. So you get to spend, what was it, about 20 minutes in there. So enough time to take plenty of really great photos. And nice. It's just, and if you get a good group, like we had a good group of really close friends as well. So the camaraderie was there. So we're all switching up who we're going in with. You know, I think I went through with everybody. So obviously I went in with everybody, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
One time I went through with you, another time I went through with Thomas and Andy. And it was just, and Lon, oh, he was brilliant.
Oh, God.
And it was just, it was red carpet treatment.
But it is like Tracy said, the biggest plus for it is you're not waiting in express lines. You get walked straight to the front of that house and go in. There's no waiting. Yeah. You're literally straight in. So I think.
Wow.
Lon went early. We left at about 1 a.m. And I know Darren and Nina...
with a small child in tow, poor kid.
Darren, Nina and Andy stayed right to the end. And I think they did another 2 houses after we left. So between the 10 of us, we got through 20 run-throughs of houses that night.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Who Tyler must have been exhausted. Oh, there was also...
And bearing in mind, we did Rip Ride Rocket. We stopped off in the immigration room tomorrow. And we had a meal in Springfield.
Yeah, we had a big group meal in Springfield. That was brilliant.
Wow, so your tour guide goes through the houses with you? Is that
Some of them he did. He went through some and a few he met at the end.
Yeah, because we're friends with Tyler himself. He always posts every year like how many, and the runs through that he gets to do, and he's getting paid for this as well. It's like 30 runs through this, and I've been through that one 45 times. And you're like, oh, I want your job.
Wow.
So yeah, if you spend the money, it's well worth it. I would say even if you go in multiple nights, try and do it at least once. Well, try and do that once.
And you don't need a group of friends if you're flush.
No?
You can just go through the two of you, but it's going to cost you a lot of money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, well, I don't know about all that. But,
but you also need to have a group of friends because they will put a group together.
Yeah.
I'm not keen on that.
So basically, if you've got 2 people here and 2 people there, they'll put a group together, but you only get 1 run through each house.
Yeah.
But it's obviously a lot cheaper.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I think. Well, it's something like $100 each.
So for 50 bucks more.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think that's something to look into in the future, some kind of group thing like that, because that seems worth it. It seems like a lot of fun, and if you don't have a lot of time to do, be able to get through everything and enjoy it. Because that's one of my complaints. It's just, you know, they're a victim of their own success. It's just so crowded.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy. It's because it doesn't actually, at least at this point from what we're seeing, it doesn't seem to have been that bad this year, really. Weight wise. Last year we were seeing wait times of like 90 upwards. This year I haven't really seen anybody complain at anything less than an hour, which is still ridiculous for a 3-minute walkthrough of a house.
Right. Well, you know, when you're paying the subcharge for this one night event too, it's kind of. You know, you want to, and when you're a fan, you want to get through everything, you know, so it's, and when I was there, I mean, the wait times got over 90 minutes at some point, for depending on what it was, but it really fluctuated. So it was really weird. We were able to get through, 8 of the 10 houses, but we also redid one of the houses, because I loved it so much, which was American Horror Story.
Yeah.
And I don't regret that at all, because going through it a second time, I saw so much more stuff. Yeah. And I was able to actually comprehend what was happening, because it's kind of sensory overload when you go through these houses.
Absolutely,
definitely.
Some more than others, 3D houses and things like that.
Yeah, that's where the RIP really, really comes in, because... Yeah. That first time, like you say, it's the same as anything. You're walking through and trying to take everything is impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they put so much effort into those houses.
I do.
That's the other crazy thing about it. When I go through this experience, I'm like, how is this a temporary thing? I mean, I'm rehashing stuff from our review episode, but I haven't talked to you guys about it. You know, it's just like... You know, going through the American Horror Story Asylum, or going through the Hive, one of the original houses this year, and walking through a basement set, I'm like, how am I not walking through a disgusting, dirty basement? This is a tent.
A tent. That's the worst thing. It's not even a permanent structure.
Which was when we were there, and it was. The exterior, well, even though it was inside, it was all like a snow.
Oh, body collectors.
It was beautiful. The outside, even though you're inside, the outside before you go into the house, it was just this landscape of beautiful snow-laden trees. And
So you walk into a soundstage and it was like the entrance to an old house, but you felt like you were outside. It was snowing.
Yeah,
and
it felt like you were in moonlight. But even like... It's a snow drift up on the doors and stuff like that. Stunning. I could have stood there for an hour and just taken that in.
It must be soul destroying as one of those creative guys from Halloween Horror Nights to see that torn down, because you're literally putting your heart and soul into something that lasts 6 weeks.
That's nuts. I mean, it's interesting that I feel like maybe because I'm in a bubble and I don't know, and this is a totally different topic, but it sort of relates. I feel like haunts are kind of exceeding Halloween time. Like, it started as like, oh, we want to do it for Halloween. But it seems like, especially in Southern California, that there's just stuff going on all the time. And I wonder if we're going to get to a point where Halloween Horror Nights is, you know, everyday Horror Nights. Or, you know, or not every single day, but that they kind of keep these things going year-round. I mean, I don't know from an operational standpoint, but from an attendance standpoint, it seems like it could sustain itself, you know, because these events are so popular.
Yeah, it's interesting to see that Universal Hollywood got that Walking Dead attraction, and the rumors for the longest time was that they were going to put a replica in Universal Orlando, and it still hasn't come to fruition. I think a lot of people, Darren, on our show, especially, we'll be thankful that that's not happening. But, you know, you looked at it, Hollywood obviously feels there's a market for that walkthrough attraction on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Right. And that was also where they had it. They actually had a walkthrough attraction there before, which was the House of Horrors, which, and even the Walking Dead attraction is, you know, it's not... It's not quite a haunt, but it's a haunt enough. It's a walkthrough attraction. Yeah. You know, it's not like full of like jump scares or anything.
You know? But then that's the thing. We've talked about it before. You know, you're lucky you've got the horror makeup show in Universal Studios Florida. Why they aren't using that as a commercial for their biggest event of the year, I don't know. You could have the exit for that stage show go through. I'm sure they could route it enough to put a small, less intense scare maze at the end of that attraction.
Sure. I mean, my first thought would be, well, I don't know, maybe that would clash with Degas, but horror makeup show is pretty gory itself, so
mm-hmm. yeah,
so it would be totally appropriate.
But then you could have it both ways. You have a scaredy exit, and then this way to the maze exit, and it doesn't have to be anything majorly long, but use that attraction to reach out to your average day guest that doesn't know about Halloween Horror Nights and promote your event in the park on a daily basis.
This episode of Creepy Kingdom has been brought to you by League of Shadows. This is an Etsy shop that specializes in paranormal and creepy-inspired jewelry, including a Haunted Mansion Parasol Girl necklace. Just go to Etsy.com/shop/League of Shadows. That's Etsy.com/shop/League of Shadows. They could have a year-round. I don't know if logistically they want to, and I know or not, but I don't know. I think there's a demand for it. And you know,
you only have to look at the attendances to Halloween Horror Nights to know that there's a market for it.
It's nuts, you know. So
we're all serious now, haven't we? Proper theme park serious talk.
Oh yes,
I know we're getting deep here, but what do we know? We're not number crunchers. We're just fans. So,
yes.
So, to kind of wrap up our chat here, I kind of wanted to bring things a little full circle. When I came on your show, I gave you what I thought were the creepiest attractions at Universal Orlando. So I'm going to kind of throw it back to you guys. And also, Tracy, you weren't there, so you didn't get to chime in because you had to go shopping, apparently.
I know what she's going to say. I know what she's going to say. And I would potentially agree.
All right. So... because you know, if you, the listeners, haven't taken a trip over to Universal Orlando, the first thing I'd have to say, independent of whether it's creepy or not, is do yourself a favor and go visit Diagon Alley, what I think is the greatest theme park land in the United States. I haven't been to overseas parks. I've heard some great things, but that is not even like a theme park land to me. That is just like I went to Diagon Alley, like. And the longer you spend there, the more time, the more the details come on blurred, the more the less signs of the real world are around you, and you're just completely immersed.
Well, we visited the Warner Brothers studio tour a couple of years ago, been through the actual set.
Yeah. Oh, yes. We cried there as well.
Yeah, so to walk through the actual sets from the movies and then go into Diagon Alley, it does feel like you're really there.
It really
does.
They've done a great job.
Yeah, it's just quick note too. My last trip to Orlando, the only time I could get to Universal was for that Halloween Horror Nights night, and I was in Diagon Alley for like maybe 15 minutes, and it was really upsetting because I didn't want to leave. But the other part of my brain is like, you have to get out of here. You have to get in another line. You can't stay here. And I'm like, I don't want to go, but you have to go. It was, first world problems, I guess. But it was.
Yeah, and that's the best time to visit Diagon Alley because no one really goes in it.
Well, here's the thing. Last year, that was true. This year it was not. It was super packed because we were going to go on Gringotts real quick because we were with someone that hadn't been to the park at all in their life, and I wanted to at least let them go on Gringotts, and last year Gringotts was a walk-on during Horror Nights. It was like a 45-minute wait.
Wow.
Yeah, so the secret's out that Diagon Alley's open during Horror Nights.
I blame it Lee for that.
It's not my fault
because Lee keeps saying, oh, Diagon Alley.
Everyone
Dead Deer in Horror Nights. That's what everyone
always says. That no one, like, no one's there for. Who wants to go to Diagon Alley? You're there for Horror Nights. You've paid $100 or whatever to get in the Halloween Horror Nights. You're not going to spend
everyone, apparently.
Apparently so.
Yeah, no, 45. I was like, we're not waiting in a 45-minute line to go on Gringotts during Horror Nights. Sorry, guys. We're like,
you're not going to wait an hour to go through a 3-minute walkthrough.
Yeah, right. Pretty much. But anyways. But there's tons of awesome little creepy experiences and attractions there at Universal. So, you know, Tracy, I know you're chomping at the bit. You weren't even on the show I was on. So I want to hear your thoughts about, you know, the creepiest Universal Orlando has to offer.
We're talking non-Halloween Horror Nights here.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, just yeah. Everyday attractions.
It's a no-brainer. E.T.
E.T.
It's
James,
the creepiest,
you knew that was the answer.
I knew it.
Horriblest
knew it.
Thing ever. Don't get me wrong. I like the bit where you're walking through the forest and all of that. And then you get in the bikes and it's downhill from there. It's just, nope. It's here. I just walk around. Well, walk around and sit. I pedal around.
You don't even pedal.
Just, I don't. Go ahead. Nope. Nope. Don't like that one. Don't like that one. That one's just so creepy. Yeah, it's just, oh.
So,
I can't even verbalize it. They're just, it's horrible. I know that they're just lumps of plastic and rubber, really. But they're obscene.
I love that attraction, but
no,
that Green Planet section at the end.
It's just,
what acid trip
I was gonna
were
say,
they
how
on?
How high were they?
That, right.
And then you've got one that's literally just got loads of breasts around her neck. Now, I don't know whether they're hers or the one she's collected.
Welcome.
It's just... Nope. That's all I can say.
You've arrived. It's just bizarre.
It's no.
Oh, it's so awesome.
Not,
come on.
Favorite, but oh no.
For people that don't know what happens, that's never been on the attraction. I did say it's kind of like Peter Pan, but the storyline is. First, you go through this queue, which is very eerie. You're in the woods. It's one of the earliest immersive. Queues that I remember of any theme park, in all honesty.
You think it was a themed queue before themed queues were even a thing?
Yeah. So it kind of sets this really eerie vibe. You don't know if Jason, you know, where he's going to come out around the corner. Like, it's pretty creepy in there. I don't know what this, especially because you go through the regular queue, which is pretty, you know, unthemed and boring, and then Steven Spielberg is like, hey, you're going to go to E.T. And so the ride kind of starts there, you know, like, because once you get into that queue part within in the woods. Anyways, then you get on a bike, and the police and all these people are trying to stop you from flying away. It's pretty much the end of E.T., the movie, which blew me away the first time I wrote that when I was, you know, younger. I was like, I can't believe this. Like, it's just like, this is so cool. And then you fly, and it's pretty fast too. Like, that part of it, it's pretty fast paced. It's probably like 15 seconds. I don't know if that. And then you fly, you're up and high in the sky, which simulates the flying over London part of Peter Pan.
Yep.
You know, and like, you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then you know, your first time on, you're like, so where are we going? I don't know. And but where you're going is you're going to E.T.'s home planet, where he needs to phone home to the Green Planet, something that we never saw in the films. This is like a sequel to E.T. And it is, as was described here, an acid trip of bizarreness. It is like... I don't even know what to compare it to. Yeah, and what's funny about E.T. is that, you know, most people, especially kids, they don't really know what E.T. is. I mean, it's definitely a film from my childhood. And I love that it's still at Universal Orlando. It's not in Hollywood anymore. And I love that that's like the only nostalgic thing that can really be experienced at Universal Orlando right now.
Here's a question for you then, right? So he's called E.T. We call him E.T. because he's an extraterrestrial, right? But then when you go on the Green Planet at the end of the ride, they all call him E.T. as well.
They do?
But
oh,
he's not
right.
Extraterrestrial to them.
Right, that's not even his name. I'm sure his name is like Frank or something on his planet.
Absolutely.
You missed out the best bit is when you at the beginning of the ride, you give the guy at the front your name, and at the end of it, E.T. says your name.
Sort of says your name.
I get fake ones now. Well, as well as I can without getting caught out.
It's ridiculous. They've actually changed it. It's had an upgrade recently, so apparently it's not as bad, but it used to be terrible.
But it was still super amusing in whatever year it came out, 92, 93, or whatever. You know, because, you know, there's still no Disney rides that say your names.
No. No, it's even true. Though they were supposed to with Magic Bands, yep. Just saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. Yeah, I guess the closest to that is the Hitchhiking Ghost now. Saying, welcome from California or something. They held up a sign that said something about what state you're from sometimes. It was, I don't know. It's kind of weird. I don't know. I don't want to get into that. Anyway, so, all right. Do you have any other entries to the creepy rides at Universal?
I'm going to throw one out there.
I was going to say anything Barney.
Oh, God, yeah.
I don't know about creepy as much as creeper.
And Barney's another one. Like, who is Barney still even on TV?
No, no, it was barely on over here. I mean, my youngest hated Barney. Hated Barney.
We've got a very infamous episode, number 23, where we were going through Kid Zone and just reading the blurb from the Universal website. And, oh my God.
Again, whoever wrote that was high.
Apparently, you can go meet Barney in Barney's backyard, and he has a musical fountain. With Baby BJ or whatever it's called, isn't it? Oh, my God, it's just...
Baby Bop and his best friend BJ.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, go and shout in his echo tunnel.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yes. Yeah, check that one out if you want. You guys were, like, dying. I'll never forget that episode either.
Yeah. We'll never forget it either. No, for all.
The Cat in the Hat ride is creepy. Now, it's because it hasn't been touched since... Oh, it's weird now. Those thing one and thing two animatronics are creepy as
they
hell.
They are a bit creepy now.
It desperately needs some TLC.
Yeah.
I didn't get it on this trip, but I always try, every time I get into Islands, I always try to go on it. It's always a walk-on, so it's not really an issue. But no. I do love that there is a Cat in the Hat dark ride.
Yeah.
But there is something about the way that they look. They're kind of supposed to look like they're still drawn a little bit. To the, their proportions aren't not human, but I don't know, not realistic. Yeah. And it looks really weird. I had an experience on that ride. The first time I went on, I was like videotaping everything around the parks, and I had my video camera out, and I was videotaping the ride. And then over the loudspeaker, someone said, "You and the black shirt, put the video camera away." Like, over, I was like, wow, I never experienced that over at Disney. And then when I realized they probably want to put your camera away, because at the end they whip you around so fast that the camera would probably fly out of your hands.
Oh, yeah, they don't spin anymore. They stopped them spinning.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow, because the first time I went on in 2013, they definitely were whipping you around and spinning real fast at the end.
Yeah, they don't spin anymore.
Wow. What a shame. Too rough for them.
I know.
I thought it was kind of rough in general, so it's probably misleading. They probably got a lot of complaints about that. I was caught off guard by that one.
That's what I was saying earlier, that Islands of Adventure, just it's kind of been left...
A bit neglected, isn't it?
A little bit, and they seem to be spending, other than, like, obviously when the Wizarding World opened, and then Skull Island, they haven't really done an awful lot to that park since it opened, 18 years ago now, and all the love seems to be going into studios. It's sad, really.
What do you think the reason is for that? All the new attractions and upgrades in studios and Islands is just sitting there, I guess.
It's weird. I don't really understand. Obviously, the replacing Dragon Challenge at this point with something in there. The rumors again around that Marvel Superhero Island will be changing drastically over the next few years to fall in line with the Marvel contract that they have with Disney, that they have to keep it up to a certain standard, which is why they replaced the Hulk coaster. But yeah, nothing like Toon Lagoon. Like, who knows who half of those characters
we know about 25% of them.
Right. I mean, what's interesting about Toon Lagoon is that they're based on comic strip characters from the Sunday Funnies. you know, and it's like, who even gets the newspaper anymore?
Yeah.
It's like some of them, you're like, oh, I remember reading those comics when I was a kid. And maybe some of the adults even, you know, think that. But the kids are like, whatever, you know, like there's some drawings of some characters, I guess. You know, like that doesn't mean anything to them.
Yeah. I don't think any of it meant anything to our two. Because no. Popeye's not even on the TV.
Oh, yeah.
Donkey's Years, even though it should be, because it's awesome.
It's weird to think that kids don't even know about Popeye, because that's so ingrained in, in my head. But yeah, you're right.
The Rock and Bullwinkle that we grew up with, and
Dudley Do-Right, and Marmaduke, and all of that stuff. No one knows who the hell they are anymore.
No.
I wonder if... I don't know. I have no idea. I have no theory on it.
No, it's weird.
You know, because you would think that maybe Toon Lagoon would be out, and they would be pushing, you know, even Universal animated films more or something, or whatever.
Just anything.
Anything. I don't know.
Anything.
You know, who knows? But it seems, I mean, there's more, isn't there a Grinch's Stole Christmas movie coming soon? Like a new one?
Next year, is it? Yeah, with Benedict Cumberbatch, isn't it?
And is it live action or is it animated?
No, it's an animated one. It's the Illumination, the ones the same that did the Lorax.
Okay. So yeah, maybe that'll revitalize that area and they'll redo things there. I know that who knows what's going to happen, but I guess if we can kind of get into that a little bit.
Go off now. On a tangent.
I don't know, a tangent. No, it was just there's so much, you know, the rumor mill is afoot here, especially with Harry Potter, because right now there's two new rumored attractions coming. There's one that they said is coming, but didn't say what it was. But they also said there's two rumors going around. So they are.
And I'm going to end up giving you what I think is going in there, right? That I've heard very strongly that that's what it's going to be. And I haven't even said this on our show yet.
Oh, exclusive.
No way.
So we're talking about they took down Dragon Challenge, which was...
Oh, no, not that one. I was going
you're
the
talking
other
about what's happening Diagon Alley. So just to clarify...
No, I was going down another route.
Oh, boy.
The T2 replacement was the one I was going down.
Really? Oh, okay. Yeah, because now Terminator 2 used to be in Hollywood. They replaced that with Despicable Me. That's closing in Hollywood. I've heard several different rumors on that one. I don't even know anything. So let's hear what you got.
The strongest rumor at this point, I was actually quite surprised because we talked about it on the show, and what we expected was a How to Train Your Dragon show, because it's something we've been clamoring for a long time, and it fits in with the more family-friendly approach that Universal have been trying to bring to the parks a bit more over the last sort of 8 or 9 years. But apparently, or at least what we've heard, very, very strongly rumored, is that it'll be based on the Bourne films.
Wow, that is I've never heard that one at all. The Bourne films. Wow, I thought the franchise was dead. Is it still going?
What was the last one that didn't they do another? They did. Jeremy Renner was in the third one, wasn't he? And then they did. Haven't they done another one with Matt Damon? Or is it coming back again with Matt Damon?
Bourne retirement now, or something like that.
Yeah, no.
Bourne.
Bourne again. Jason Bourne again.
Yeah, I mean, I know that on our show I was a bit down on it being How to Train Your Dragon because I feel it's taken out an edgy ride, not sort of ride, but like show, and putting in something that's quite tame. But I love How to Train Your Dragon, but I'd much rather have that than Bourne.
Well, if it's going to be How to Train Your Dragon, it's probably would be a simulator ride, right? Because how would you pull that off with practical sets?
Is a How to Train Your Dragon show kicking around somewhere.
No, I've seen that. Yeah, it's like an arena show. But the other rumor I kept hearing about was Star Trek. That they're doing some kind of Star Trek.
Jim Hill's talked about it quite a lot recently. And we actually heard a few years ago that Universal were... inches or seconds away from signing the deal to bring Star Trek, and it was actually the rumor back then was it was going to replace Men in Black, which I'd have my podcast would have ended at that point because I'd have fallen out with them completely.
Well, the same ride or just the same space? Like a Star Trek phasers and stun? How much fun would that be? I don't know. I don't know what a Star Trek attraction is. You know, like I can't really. I can't really see it.
You have to throw yourself from side to side.
Yeah, I guess.
But it's that thing. You kind of look at Universal fault. Seem to be guilty of jumping on franchises when they're kind of nearing the end. You know, they look at you. Look at Potter when Diagon Alley opened. I think had all the films come out at that point. I'm sure they were.
Maybe the licenses are.
And then like Fast and Furious that's opening next year. We're on what, 8 coming out next year. And then Bourne, the last Bourne film I've just looked on IMDb there was out last year. So it seems weird that for all the chin Universal, like we talked about at the beginning, that because they haven't got that nostalgia, they're trying to go in what's in the pop culture now. They're still bringing things into the park that are potentially towards the end of their lifespan.
Done.
it's interesting. Well, yeah, or done. Yeah. Well, I think maybe the thought process on that is, it's still in your mind. It's still in the consciousness. You're still familiar with what it is, you know, and that's proven to be what's happening with, you know, with the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. I mean, maybe that's just not a good example because it's kind of, that's going to be like the Wizard of Oz or, you know, or something like that 100 years from now, you know, that's just going to live on forever. But even with Fast and Furious, like, I mean, what do you really need to know about Fast and Furious before you go on? You know, you're in cars, you know, the Diesel mumbles, you know, and then you're ready to go. You don't need to watch the movies, to be that familiar with it. And maybe that is with the Bourne. The Bourne thing is kind of weird to me. I don't know how that would translate to a theme park attraction. That doesn't really excite me at all.
Not me either.
You know, I mean, some of the movies are fun to watch, I guess, but they're not. They're not like
we've seen one.
Yeah, we've only ever seen the first one.
That was enough for us.
I mean, you know, you watch the other ones, you're like, oh, that was a fun action movie, but it's not like so over the top. They're like, oh man, I want to experience this. I hope Universal opens the.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even if they did something like James Bond, at least there's like a legacy or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, maybe
to be honest, as long as they keep it a similar attraction to T2, so it's at least if it's a 3D movie, it's got that actor element as part of it and everything else, then I'll be relatively happy.
I want them to keep they say there's a bit that's a bit creepy and scary. I want them to keep the T-70s that rise up out of the ground because...
Well, they're scary.
I like them.
Yeah, they're...
Yeah, they could be real.
I know the T-70s because I'm just working our tribute to T2 3D at the moment.
Yeah, I could remember.
For a couple of weeks now.
Yeah, sadly. Yeah, sadly, I didn't get to say goodbye, but I did visit it last trip, so...
Good. This is,
I mean, the trip before, but not this last one.
It's in bad shape at the moment. I know a few of our listeners have reported that they've been there in the last week and they're just letting it go, and it's apparently awful.
It's out. When's it scheduled to close?
As we're recording this week? A week yesterday.
A week yesterday, yeah.
Yep. Well, going back to the other rumors we're talking about, as I was talking about Harry Potter.
Backtrack.
Which I'm sure we all want to, the listeners are really want to be clear on. So they're closing down Dragon Challenge, which was Dueling Dragons initially.
It's half gone.
Or it's pulled down. It's. Which was a, you know, a roller coaster, in case you haven't been there yet, which took up a huge chunk of land. So they've said was that another Harry Potter experience is coming that's unlike anything else. You know, and that's it. It's interesting how Universal, they usually don't like to put out too much information ahead of time.
Yeah.
You know, so they just, the fact that they even said that was probably out of character. I think they just wanted some kind of good news going with the fact they were closing Dragon Challenge.
Yeah, if you look back to Skull Island, that was half built, and we had Jim Hill on the show, and he was talking like that he'll go to the park and be talking like Universal Creative and go, what's that thing over there? And they'll go, what thing over where? I don't know what you're talking about. And it's like half built.
Wow. So I'm not sure what they're... why they do that or not, but so the theories, the rumors of what's going on there is something to do with the Forbidden Forest. Which is interesting because I'm not really sure. I mean, you know, not to get too deep into Harry Potter for people that don't really know, but you know, part of what happens in the Forbidden Forest happens in Forbidden Journey.
Yep.
You know, because, I mean, clearly when they built Forbidden Journey, they were like, well, this is clearly all that's ever going to be built, so let's just put everything into this one ride, which is why it's so awesome. They had no idea that, you know, how huge this would all become. But what really, I'm kind of curious of what it's going to be. I mean, do you guys have any speculation of what a Forbidden Forest attraction would be?
The rumors I was talking to Seth Kabersky a few weeks back, and the big rumor, at least what he was hoping, it was quite a strong rumor, but one of the ones that he was really hoping is, I don't know whether you're familiar with Europa Park at all, James.
I am not. I've heard of it, but I'm not too familiar. I keep hearing lots about it, though, actually.
Yeah, it's somewhere I am desperate to get to in Germany, and they have a ride based on Arthur and the Invisibles, an animated film from, I can't even remember, we haven't even seen it. Was it like 10 years ago?
Something like
that. Have you heard of it, James, at all?
I haven't, no.
No. There's a film called Arthur and the Invisibles, animated film from a few years ago, and it's like an inverted coaster, but it's more a family-style coaster, but it's a powered coaster rather than being your normal sort of gravity coaster, so they can control the speed and the direction the cars are at any given point. So if you look at, I think it's Motion Gate in Dubai, there's a How to Train Your Dragon attraction as well based on the same ride technology. If you go have a look on YouTube, the videos are on YouTube, and I think
it's that stunning.
Would suit it very, very well.
Yeah. Because it's inside and outside on one of them, isn't it?
Yeah, the one at Europa Park
it's beautiful.
But because it's effectively a dark ride, but it's still a coaster. It's a suspended coaster, but because the cars are powered, they can control the speed wherever you are, so they can slow it down to go through the show scenes, but then also speed it up to have more exciting segments.
So a bit like Gringotts then, really.
Kind of.
But with a bit more control. Ah. Less screens, hopefully.
But that's the thing. They have said, we are building something unlike anything we've ever built before. So it's like, you can't have screens in it then, because everything else has.
Yes.
Right,
in that case, then, it's enchanted broomsticks that were actually going to get to fly.
Yeah, unlike anything. See, that's such a broad statement.
Yeah,
to be unlike anything we've ever built before.
I don't know. That sets the bar high.
They haven't built it.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, it doesn't say it doesn't exist. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like we said before, the problem with Universal is they threw everything they had into Forbidden Journey.
Mm.
And that raised the bar so high.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Raise it a little bit. It was like, we're going for the clouds. And everything else has struggled to live up to the bar that Forbidden Journey set. Mm-hmm. So Gringotts is a good ride. And it's, yeah, but you're saying that, Tracy's pulling faces. But the thing is, you're comparing it to the last attraction you rode that they built, which was Forbidden Journey.
Yes.
If Forbidden Journey wasn't built and you rode Gringotts, you go, this is cool. You know, the 3D screens work really well. The fact that the cars rotate independently, so you start at the back and then in one section, the cars are spinning around and you're in front of the people that were behind you at the beginning. You're in front of the people that were in front of you when you started out, and the tilt track and all that, it's really cool. If you hadn't ridden Forbidden Journey, then that probably would have blown your mind. But because the bar was set so high with Forbidden Journey, you're like, oh, this is crap.
Yeah. Not my fault. It's their fault.
Well, it is.
It is.
Yeah, it was disappointing, to say the least, you know, going from Forbidden Journey to Gringotts. I mean, it wasn't completely disappointing because I love Bellatrix Lestrange, so any attraction with her will keep me happy.
But, don't forget your T-shirt, James, by the way.
No, they've never made that in a... for men, it's always a woman's cut, the wanted Bellatrix Lestrange shirt. But yeah, another Forbidden Journey is in my top five of attractions of all time. I mean, the list kind of always fluctuates around a little bit, but this is the order. I mean, but but it is they set the bar so high with that. It was that. Like you said, they were like the next attraction, you'd want it to be bigger and better, you know. And when I thought of what Gringotts attraction could be, You know, I mean, when you're watching the films, you know, that's clearly a thrill ride roller coaster. You're like, yeah. Oh, I want to ride that. You know, not I want to see screens that make it look like I'm there. Like, you know, you want it to be a thrilling indoor roller coaster. You know, and if it had just been that, like kind of like The Mummy, I think a lot more people would accept it, you know, because that's what happens in the movie, you know, like just put a little spot, you know, a little headlight on it and pass some dragons every once in a while. You know?
But that's the thing. Everyone's got used to attractions now have to tell a story. It's all about the story.
Yeah. Well,
and you can't do that on a high thrill roller coaster. Really?
It's not always about the story.
But that's what people expect now.
Sometimes, though, you just, you know, particularly, take a bit of speed.
Yeah, well, that was Harry Potter, though. They're not going to have a ride.
No.
That has to, I mean, even Flight of the Hippogriff has a loose story.
Oh, I don't know.
Those breaks at the end are a killer.
Whiplash.
That's a story, right?
Hello, first literary claim.
I still haven't put my claim in yet for the last time I wrote it.
There is another rumor, too, but outside of Diagon Alley is the Fear Factor stage where the Bill and Ted show is in Halloween Horror Nights is now closing. Nobody cares about the Fear Factor Live. So there's a rumor that space is going to take over to another Harry Potter attraction.
Yeah.
I don't know where that rumor came from.
I don't know. came from...
What was that, firstly?
So, where did that rumor come from?
I think it was us. I think we put that rumor out there.
It's been the Ministry of Magic.
Oh, is that that's the one that the rumor that went got a little viral there, huh?
It went a bit crazy, when we put that out there. It was in, like, I remember because someone told us that that's what was going to be announced the day that, it was actually the day that Bill and Ted was announced that it was going to be its farewell tour this year. And we were told that they were also going to announce the Fear Factor was closing for an expansion of the Wizarding World of Harry Potter with the Ministry of Magic. So I tweeted it out. Someone grabbed hold of it and posted it in the annual pass, the Universal Orlando annual pass holders group. And by the time I'd come home from work, it had something like 1,000 likes and something like 200 comments, and I was like, "Oh my god, I hope this thing's true."
Well, you said it was a rumor, right? I mean, you didn't say it.
Yeah.
What I like to imagine though is this rumor just became so strong because of us that Universal turned around and went, "Gonna have to do it now."
I can't see that happening.
If it happens, we can pretend.
Yeah, they said it on UUOP. We have to.
We've got to do it now.
Of course, yeah. I think that's a fun rumor, I guess, you know. I've heard some complaints and maybe even been on your show about is it too much Harry Potter?
Oops, sorry.
No, Darren's just as bad.
Well, no, I am a huge Harry Potter fan, but it isn't Harry Potter World.
Well, it is, because that's what everyone calls it.
Well, yeah. But, you know, not everybody's a Harry Potter fan. You've got to please everybody who pays a ticket price.
No, they don't.
You do.
Yeah, well, they've got Marvel.
They do. I mean, but my thoughts on that are, you can't build enough Harry Potter stuff. I mean, that's just my personal thought. Whether it's a good business plan or not, I don't know. But I'm just saying, for my personal taste, I'm like, I mean, there's so many things you could do, like Harry Potter thing. We haven't even touched, you know, Fantastic Beasts.
No,
you know, like, and so you know, there's so many theme park experience. I mean, they could have made it a third gate. I mean, I'm sure they were scared to do that at the time because they didn't know, you know, they were going into uncharted territory doing something so immersive.
I bet they wish they had now, though.
I don't know. I think we've talked about it on the show before. To create a theme park that is just one theme, I think it's a really iffy strategy, because the difference with the Wizarding World being in Universal and Islands of Adventure is, as a family, if you've got a couple of Harry Potter fans and a couple that are like, I'm not really bothered, you go, right, we'll go into Diagon Alley with you, we'll spend a couple of hours in there, and then we can go and do Minions or Mummy or Jimmy Fallon or Men in Black or The Simpsons or whatever you've got. But if you create an entire theme park based around a single IP, if you're not a fan of that IP, you're not going to set foot in that park.
No, but there's plenty of people who will.
I think we had
Moominland in Finland.
Yeah, but that's why it's only in Finland, though.
No, it's Finnish. That's why.
Exactly. Because no one else knows who the bloody Moomins are. James, do you know who the Moomins are?
No, what's that? The Moomins?
They're like little white hippos.
They're very
Finnish
strange.
The,
you want to talk about creepy? There we go. Go and look that up on YouTube.
You leave Snork Maiden alone.
It's bizarre.
I love Moomins.
It's like the Finnish equivalent of the Smurfs.
Okay.
No, Smurfs are evil. No, they're horrible.
Smurfs.
But that's a land that's very popular.
Yeah, so it does in work. Finland.
People travel from out of Finland to go there.
From like Belgium and Germany.
I'll be going if I can ever get over to see my pen pal.
That's the only reason you're going though.
No, it's not.
Anyway.
Oh, it's so horrible.
I'm glad that in this day and age of email and internet that you actually have a pen pal. So that's really charming.
I have many pen pals that I write to.
Paper and pen still exist.
Yes.
Wow, very charming. But yeah, no, you bring up a point, I guess, you know, but it just, the demand is, I mean, the thing is, it doesn't make any financial sense. But I'm just saying, like, as logistically, it would, you know, as a fan, to be able to go into a whole theme park of that, like where you're literally, you know, you're 100% immersed. I think that would be such a fun time. But the thing is that they're getting people over for Harry Potter, and people are seeing all the other stuff. And if it was just his own theme park, people probably wouldn't even go to the other parks. You know, the ones that are just trying it out, that just want to do Harry Potter. So it makes sense. Yeah. It makes sense for sure. But I don't know. You know, there's been this rumors of a third or fourth gate, because now I guess Volcano Bay is their third gate, of a fourth gate. And you guys talk about it on the show all the time. Like, what is it going to be? You know, Nintendo Land's supposed to take over Kids Zone.
Kids Zone, yeah.
You know, and Islands of Adventure needs a facelift. What could they possibly do for a third gate? Like, what would have you guys speculated on what it would possibly be?
We actually haven't, and you've just reminded me that I think we need to do a show on this at some point in the future. It's such, like, it's difficult. Like, you think about Disney. If Disney were to do a fifth park, what would the theme be?
Yeah, it's even tough too. I mean, you could just I have no idea, you know, I mean,
exactly. Yeah. It's tough to think of what they could do.
Thinking about what's missing from Orlando, you haven't got a ski resort, so you could do that.
You've got Blizzard Beach.
Blizzard Beach, yeah, I was like,
yeah, but I mean, real skiing.
Oh, like simulated skiing in Orlando.
Dry ski snow. You know me, I always go off.
Oh, I know.
To be honest, what I actually think they should do is recreate every house and scare zone from the past, 27 years.
That'd be cool. Because
that plot of land is big enough, and just have HHN land and recreate everything they've ever done.
I'd be up for that.
Wow.
That's what I'd like to see.
It's only open at night.
Yeah. I think what you're going to see, you're probably going to see something very similar to Universal Studios Florida, a sort of mishmash of franchises. Because I think the need to do something with Jurassic World. We heard a rumor a while back that the patent's been put in place for the technology to create those. I don't know whether it'd be a simulator type thing or whether they actually managed to create them, but those weird geospheres from Jurassic World.
Yeah, and they have like two more of those coming out, right? I think Jurassic Park, Jurassic World movies. So,
which I would love to see. But other than that, it's weird. We talked about before, what other big franchises are out there now that Disney haven't bought? You know, Lord of the Rings maybe, or The Hobbit, but I think they're kind of done and gone now. I think that, like Harry Potter, they have the potential to be sort of evergreen franchises.
For hardcore, but pop culture, I don't know. That's debatable whether Lord of the Rings is going to bring them in like Harry Potter. I don't know. It's kind of an older audience, I guess, you know, not necessarily the ones that go to theme parks, so I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough to think about something that has the draw of a Star Wars or a Marvel. See, for me, that somewhere needs to go to Six Flags and go, just give us DC,
I'm trying to speak, because you're obviously going, and that's what I was going to say, DC.
Well, it's interesting.
Get the licenses for DC.
Well, I just went to Six Flags recently, and they just opened up an attraction that's kind of like a shooter game, kind of like Toy Story with Mania.
Can't think what it's called. Yeah, it's got the Joker animatronic in the queue, hasn't it?
No, that's actually in the ride. They have a Joker animatronic and a Harley Quinn one. Yeah, and then the rest is all shooter. That's a Cyborg animatronic in the queue. So it's a Justice League theme ride. And
I can't think what it's called. What's it called, James?
I just wrote it. I can't remember. But Justice League shoot 'em up. I don't know. I'm not sure that's not what it's called. But, whatever it is, it's not the most amazing thing ever, but it was a lot of fun, and it certainly is a step up from whatever is at Six Flags in the past. So I feel like they're kind of knowing that people are expecting the Universal Disney style experiences even when they go to Six Flags, because for years Six Flags has just been kind of floating on just being a roller coaster park. I don't think they're going to give up that DC Warner Brothers.
Sadly, no.
They've had DC and Looney Tunes characters my whole life, so so they're probably not going to give up those anytime soon.
That's really interesting when you say that, though. Then if you go back into the history of Islands of Adventure, that Looney Tunes and DC were actually two of the original properties that were going into Islands of Adventure.
Cartoon Land or whatever it was going to be called.
Yeah. Because where Marvel Superhero Island is now was supposed to be Metropolis, and then the Halls of Justice were in the middle, and then the other side was Gotham City.
Yeah.
You know, maybe because there's no Six Flags in Orlando or in Florida, they were able to do that. You know, with the licensing, because the closest Six Flags is I don't even know. I have no idea. I'm not a Six Flags person.
Isn't the one in Georgia? Is the one in Georgia?
Maybe that might be the closest one. That might be the closest one. Yeah, that's but you know, I think they had one in near New Orleans that closed or was abandoned or not too long ago. But so that's. Maybe that's how they got away with it. And it would be interesting to see what they would have done with those properties.
Well, we shall find out, George, because I have the man behind that original concept coming on our podcast at some point in the future.
Wow, what a great segue teaser there.
Yeah, we've had Gary Goddard. We've had him on the show to talk about T2 3D and Jurassic Park the River Adventure as well. But yeah, I really want to dig into that. And actually the original concept for the Hulk, because the Hulk isn't what it was originally going to be either.
Ooh.
All right, well.
To be a Silver Surfer attraction.
Of course, I know all of this, being a co-host of the show.
You have no idea, do you?
No, I do, actually.
Silver Surfer. That's interesting.
I do listen sometimes.
You listen sometimes?
I'm such a nerd on these things, though. That's the problem.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah. It's fun exploring what was supposed to be there, what's not there, what could have been, and, you know, what's coming and speculating all that. We could probably talk about that stuff forever, but
absolutely.
You know, who knows? Or we can't, because we can't figure out what a third gate at Universal would actually be.
It's just trying to look for a concept for a theme park that's not already been done out there. It's people get paid a hell of a lot more money than I do to come up with this stuff. So
sure, right?
This is true.
But it is. It's difficult to think. You know, what do you do that isn't already out there? It's tough.
And I think the idea of like a studios movie behind the scenes thing, I think that's kind of going to the wayside. You know, Hollywood Studios at Disney's is going to change soon to kind of completely get rid of that element. Especially these days, you know, how is movies made? You know, well, they stand in front of this green screen and then people, animators spend months behind a computer. You know, it's not all as physical as it was when these parks opened.
You know, maybe they'd step away from movies and go down the TV route, because the production values of TV shows nowadays are much
high.
Better.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that could be quite interesting.
You know, when
you
think of some of the franchises out there for the TV shows,
Game of Thrones, Strange.
Oh wow! Yeah, now you've guys cracked it. There's a gold mine that's not even being touched.
Absolutely.
when you look at the big names now that attach themselves to TV series, not movies. You know, see, brains and beauty.
Universal TV Studios, Florida.
You're not supposed to laugh.
You don't know which part I was laughing at. So. No. Your veins and breeder, you got them both. You're all good. But no, that's really fascinating idea. I put this all, like, anytime anyone asked me this past year, I was sadly disappointed. I've been on other podcasts, and whenever Hollywood Horror Nights would come up, I just was like, I'm just putting this out there to the Hollywood Horror Nights gods. I want a Stranger Things house. Please, please give me one. I hope my...
It was strong, wasn't it? I think you might get the next best thing next year. I fully expect them to do a house based on it next year. And let's be honest, it's kind of Stranger Things seeing it, but it's...
Sure.
I've seen you think things, that, but I haven't seen it.
Well, it lends heavily on it.
I'm not sure. It's weird because... I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, it was weird that it wouldn't have happened this year. But the other aspect of it, which is been an in-depth discussion that Shannon and I, my girlfriend, have had. So they had this It kind of experience out here in Southern California leading up to the film that now has moved over to the Warner Brothers studio tour for the Halloween event that's coming up, which was pretty much, I didn't get a chance to do it, but from Shannon's description, it was... You know, Hollywood Horror Nights level, you know, walkthrough attraction. So they kind of did it independent of Hollywood Horror Nights, which was interesting. And the other thing that Shannon has informed me is that Stephen King does not allow any of his IPs to be, Hollywood Horror Nights houses. That's why this very specifically says for The Shining, Stanley Kubrick's.
Yeah. Plus, I knew that.
Yeah.
Plus, Stephen King, obviously, not obvious to some, but he hates Stanley Kubrick's movie.
Yes.
So it's I don't think it's, you know, I get what you're saying. If they were going to do it, it probably should have been this year, since the next It movie is about them as adults.
Yeah.
But then when that film comes out, you then lean on both of them. And you could do the first half of them of kids, and then the second half of them as adults. Well, you can cover the whole gambit at that point.
You could, but we'll see. And apparently, I said that house is going to the studio thing, because Warner Brothers Studios, for the first time last year, had a Halloween event for like 2 days. And that is, you know, that really is more of like going on a studio tour, but it was just kind of horror and Halloween themed. But apparently, they have created... they're going to have that It experience, and they're also have created some kind of walk-through areas that based on Nightmare on Elm Street. That's what I just heard. So I was like, are they dipping their toe in the haunt world there a little bit? I don't know. Well, once we go to that event, I'll report back.
But then also you think about the relationship that Universal have with Warner Brothers.
Right.
Already.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, they have such a tight one. So it's interesting, and it's also super interesting, I guess, because over here this year in Hollywood, they had the Titans of Terror House, which is Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, and Leatherface. So it's interesting that Warner Brothers is doing a Nightmare on Elm Street thing, and there already is one currently happening, you know, a few miles away. So it's... I don't know. It's interesting to see where all these things are going, but that's what I'm saying. The haunts and the Halloween stuff keeps growing and getting bigger and bigger. Everything goes back to that, I guess. But I just get so excited about it. Just like and stuff. But I guess we got to wrap this episode up because we've been going for a while.
So how long is it going to be, James? An hour? I think we've been on for about two now. Yeah. That's a problem when you put people together who can talk.
Yeah. a lot to say about all this stuff, but
absolutely.
I've wanted you guys to come on the show and just have a general chat about Universal and, you know, a little bit more of your insight and all that fun stuff. You know, I'd love to have you guys come back on for a specific reason or for something to cover or talk about. I don't know, but I always love chatting with you guys.
We've loved it as well. Awesome. It's been brilliant.
Yeah. I can talk theme parks all day.
Yes, so. We do.
Yeah, we do. That's the problem.
You do already. Right on. Yeah.
Yes, I'm sure you and Shannon are the same.
That's what
it's either haunts or theme parks.
Yeah, I mean, Shannon's theme park talk doesn't go too far. So it's like I have to talk into a microphone and on the internet to talk about theme parks. And what's even funnier, too, is Shannon appears on the show because we'll review the big haunts together.
Yeah.
And I have to literally force her to do it. Like I sit her down, I tape a microphone to her and I say, talk to me. Like she does not want to be a podcaster at all. but she has such insight. And I mean, she's a writer, you know, and cause she writes for her website, Nightmarish Conjurings. And, I would say sometimes she wants me to write reviews and I'm like, I'm not a writer. I'm a talker. So I'll talk about it, but yeah, I don't know. I don't want to write. So, but everyone has their thing. So it's all good. But,
yeah, I'm a talker.
Yeah. I used to be. And then I met Lee.
What?
I just don't get a word in edgeways now.
Yeah. I got where she was going with that. All right. So, to find your show online, you guys on social media, how do people do that?
Are you going to do it or shall I?
You do it.
Pretty much wherever you'll find Creepy Kingdom, you will find us as far as the podcast. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Libsyn, all that jazz. And we're on Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/UUOpodcast. We are on Twitter at UUOpodcast. Everything. Pinterest, YouTube,
yes, Pinterest,
all of that.
Yes.
Just Pinterest. You guys keep up with your Pinterest page?
Yeah, that's Tracy's job. I don't have anything. Everything else is me, the Pinterest
it.
Her.
Okay.
we have universal-based crafts recipes.
Really? Wow.
Pictures. Oh, yeah. Just search it all out. Get it pinned. So if you want copycat recipes, they're usually on there.
Basically, just everything your podcast.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, I didn't know you guys had a Pinterest page where I can get some buttermilk recipes. Wow. That's awesome. Well, and what's your website?
UUOpodcast.com.
There it is. Awesome. Well, thanks again for coming on, guys.
Thanks for having us.
If you'd like to contact us here at the Creepy Kingdom Podcast Program, you can do so by emailing us, creepykingdom@gmail.com. And for show notes, videos, links to our articles, videos. Did I say videos? Videos. So many videos. So many links to everything you've ever wanted from Creepy Kingdom. It could be found by going to creepykingdom.com. And if you would like to support us here at the Creepy Kingdom Podcast, you can do so by going to patreon.com/creepykingdom. Well, until next time, kids.
Keep it creepy.
This episode of Creepy Kingdom has been brought to you by Olivia Frankenstein. Olivia Frankenstein is an Etsy store that specializes in creepy-inspired enamel pins, buttons, t-shirt, patches, posters, bags, and much more, including their original design, Spooky Mouse Club, a must-have for every Creepy Kingdom citizen. You can check out that design and much more by going to oliviafrankenstein.patternbyetsy.com. That's oliviafrankenstein.patternbyetsy.com.